Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.
Hello.
Hi, KB. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Look at this wonderful audience we have in front of us, huh?
Thank you.
First of all, I want to give a big shout out to the guy with the glasses. Amazing. Lady in the green, lady in the white, and the
gentleman. And the two lovely ladies in front.
And there's a couple of gentlemen on the left-hand side, and Woo-hoo! There's a familiar face I can see. Hi, Stacey. How you doing? KB, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We've taken the...
I know.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's organize ourselves. We've been instructed to keep this very close to our mouths. Otherwise,
eat
they can't hear anything.
The mic. Yeah. Got it.
Eat the mic. So this is the Inside Track on tour. How do you feel about joining the Inside Track on tour? The first ever guest on tour.
I love being the first.
It's always good to be the first.
It is.
No one wants to be second in anything.
Well, sometimes you do, but in this case, I like being first.
Yeah, yeah. So, Gaby, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me, what do you do for a living? I do know the answer, but I want you to tell
those
listening. Okay.
I'm glad that all of that catch-up helped. I am the chief marketing officer of NetApp, and I've been in marketing my entire career. So this is, I think, the third time I've been the chief marketing officer, but the most fun I've had.
Amazing. You've been in the role for about 3 years, give or take?
That is correct.
Yeah, and you've always been in tech.
Always in tech.
How much do you love tech?
I mean, I am at my core a geek, I guess, right? Yeah. So I like code. I like product.
Yeah.
One of my very first jobs was in a distribution center where I had to take motherboards out of laptops.
Yeah.
Don't do that anymore.
No.
That is how old I am.
You know that. By the way, I was a stag. Can I say on stage what I've just found out off stage?
Oh, sure.
You have a 30-year-old daughter. How has that happened?
Yes,
you look
I
fantastic.
Do. I had children before I went to work, so yeah. I did it in reverse.
Okay. So for those who are listening online, hello to those listening online. We have a live audience, which is great. And for
welcome.
Those on stage, also welcome. So for those who aren't familiar with the Inside Track, we have three staples. Okay. I will always ask my guests to bring in their favorite mug. I always ask my guests to give me a safe word they feel comfortable with in case I ask a question they don't want to answer. And then on your left-hand side, you can see a rather nice bag, well-branded, with a bunch of golf balls in it, which we'll get to later.
I'll make it more accessible.
So let's start with a mug. If you could bring any mug in, what would be your virtual mug? What would it look like?
Well, I'll just use the one I have at home. It is has a broken handle, and it says warm.
Well, talk to me about it.
Yeah, I don't know. It just is the most comfortable mug, and it says warm. That's what I drink warm out of.
Who gave you that mug?
I actually don't remember. I suspect that's why it's broken.
Okay, very nice. So are you a big tea drinker, coffee drinker?
Anything warm.
Anything warm.
Yeah, at all times.
Goat milk? Are you a goat milk?
No.
Camel milk? We're in Qatar. Do you like it?
I mean, I've not tried it. I am open to camel milk. Caffeine does not affect me.
Yeah.
All hours, I can drink it.
Yeah.
So tea, coffee, doesn't matter.
So they gave us 45 minutes to do an Inside Track version. It normally takes an hour. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to skip through a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
And I'm going to get straight to your safe word. So if I ask a question that you don't want to answer...
Bananas.
Oh, that was quick.
Well, I had to think about it, and
yeah,
I'm being safe. Bananas. And
I
you
like
said
it.
We had to speed it up.
So let's test out the theory.
All right.
If you're going to use bananas. Okay?
Okay.
Or should we do it later? We'll do it later. We'll make it more organic. We'll make it forced.
Okay.
So you've obviously worked in tech for most of your life.
Yes.
Okay? But you initially started off and you wanted to be a lawyer. We have that in common. We both wanted to get into law. But you also started in sales, field sales.
I did.
How much has that impacted you as a marketeer? Has it made you a better marketeer?
I think it has, because I know what the end result is. I know what the person carrying the bag or what the customer wants to hear. So yeah. I'm always thinking about the end result, not the beginning result, not how I get there, but how somebody has to sell this or how somebody wants to buy this. I think that's huge.
And NetApp, for those who don't know, is one of the largest data infrastructure and storage companies in the world, right?
That is correct.
And you operate in over 30 countries worldwide?
That is correct.
You made about just over $1 billion in profit last year and $6 billion plus in revenue.
Bordering on seven, so
oh,
yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Is that the plan for this year? Are we going for double-digit
growth?
Yes, sir. Love it. So you're a big tech enthusiast, but your challenge as a marketeer is to really steer the conversation inside the organization
100%.
To be able to deliver against your marketing challenges.
Correct.
How difficult is that in 2025 at a tech company?
You know, I think the noise is what's the hardest. I think these days in technology, you're competing with not just all the tech companies, but all the consumer companies. You're competing with language that sounds the same.
Yeah.
You know, you use the word change or transformation, and all of a sudden you realize that a cell phone distributor is using the same, and you're like, ah, I can't use that word. So I think it's challenging, but I think that's what makes marketing so much more fun in tech, because that's why I got into tech.
Yeah.
I wanted to be at the forefront. I wanted to be leading. I wanted to be defining. I didn't want to be following. And I think that trying to find that uncharted path is what you should be looking for.
Yeah. I've worked with clients, marketing clients, for nearly 20 years. The success of the organization, the success of the marketeer is often how the structure of marketing sort of sits within that organization.
That's fair.
And the power and influence that's afforded to you. So within NetApp, you've got a nice role because you kind of have a reporting line into the head of revenue, the chief revenue officer.
Correct.
So you have a sales hat and you have a marketing hat, which will afford you more opportunity to go into different swim lanes to drive the marketing agenda. Is that fair?
That's absolutely fair. My boss is the president, who is also not just revenue, but marketing, services, sales, support. So
yeah.
It's the whole remit, and I get to look across that whole customer journey.
Very nice. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to break precedent. Normally what I would do with you, Gaby, was that we'd have a bit of a chit-chat. I'd warm you up a little bit. Those insights would start to flow. But you know what? We're going to fast-track all of that, and we're going to deep dive into the bag of balls.
Oh, the bag.
Yes. So inside the bag, there are 8 golf balls, and on the golf ball, there is a question that goes around the circumference of it. So what I would love you to do, take one out each time, read it out loud, and let's have a debate.
All right. Here we go. Okay, I should have brought my glasses up.
You're testing the eyesight, huh?
Yeah. First of all, at some point, you're going to have to tell me why it's a golf ball.
I'll tell you now. So I love golf. I've been a golfer since I was a kid. It reminds me of my dad. So I used to have a lot of fun memories playing golf.
I love that.
Golf with my dad. I also wanted to get something that when I ask a question, it's small enough to go around. So it doesn't have to be one of those long questions, but it's small enough and punchy enough to get straight to the point.
I love it. And it's a Titleist for those of you who are golf fanatics.
We are sponsored by Titleist. Thank you so much. Appreciate
there you go. Okay, the question is, secure the short-term demand funnel or calculate longer-term business growth?
So the context of this is really a lot of marketeers have a lot of pressure to deliver that short-term result, right? They have quarterly targets, if not monthly targets, and the pressures that you're getting from the business is to deliver. The challenge with markets is, as you well know, is you've got to deliver both, man. You've got to do the short term and you've got to do the long term. So where do you prioritize? And I don't want you to say both. You've got to pick one. And you've got to explain to me what is more important for you in the situation and the context of NetApp at the moment.
You mean I can't say both?
No. It's my show.
You know, I'm going to say short term then, because that's how I get paid. You don't fill a pipe by not paying attention to the short term. However,
look at that.
I'm going to get the second one in there. However, if a marketer is not preparing the organization for the amount of time it takes to fill the short term funnel, which in my case is 12 to 18 months.
Okay.
So if I am not including the 12 to 18 month visual or sales cycle in that short term, then they're unable to see what's coming. So I find that even though I'm talking short term, I can talk long term because I'm talking about the pipeline in advance of the pipeline actually in pipe.
From a short term perspective, how obsessed do you think current day, modern day marketers, how much pressure do they have on them to deliver those short term results?
I think that is 100% the pressure. I believe that any VP of marketing, any demand gen, any CMO these days is going to be brought on because of their ability to generate demand, not because they're a brander, not because they're a communications expert, not because they're a services person. They're being brought on to generate demand. I often think that a lot of times when you recruit for a CMO, you get the, we want you to have the full stack. And yet all the questions come with, what are you going to do for demand? What do you need to generate for demand? So I think if you're cognizant of that, then you're saying, I know that I need to be aware of the end result, and my short-term goals are going to be what is most important. but I also know that you need me for all that other stuff.
Yeah. Do you buy yourself time if you deliver, let's say, 2 quarters or 2 sales cycles in a row? Do you then build yourself enough ammunition to go back to the business and say, look, I've been delivering on the short term, but really, guys,
absolutely,
back me. I want to deliver against a much longer and higher
absolutely
time.
Absolutely. My very first thing that I did, they had disbanded field marketing. The very first thing I did was bring it back so we had a demand engine. That bought me 2 quarters.
Nice. It feels good, right?
It does.
When you get some buy-in from the organization, right? Because
yeah,
you delivered, you're then able to pick up more momentum, bring on more stakeholders with you, and start influencing products.
But then you're in marketing, right? So those 2 quarters evaporate almost immediately, and then you're 2 quarters in the hole. So,
yeah, I'm with you. How do you feel about the first question? Eased you in?
Easy.
Quite straightforward, right?
Would you like me to get another Titleist?
I think it might not be a Titleist. It might be something else.
Okay.
Knock yourself out. Let's do it. One or all. So not only do I make you test your eyesight, you have to test your athletic skills trying to get down.
I know.
To, yeah,
you're really making me work out over here. Okay. All right. It is, in fact, a Titleist, a Pro V1 for those of you who play golf. I know that because I also play golf. All right. You ready?
You're a golfer, huh?
Yes. Not not good.
But not?
I'm not even going to... If it goes over... like 4, I stop counting.
Okay. Read the question. Let's go.
Bring the AI math or humanize the magic? What is more business effective? That's a great question.
Thank you. So in my research, you talk a lot about bring the math.
Yes.
Right? And then the AI bit is you say very famously, the more data you have, the better the AI can work.
That's
right?
Correct.
And marketing sits on a hell of a lot of data.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So is it better to bring the AI math, or is it actually better to focus and create the magic through humans, through innovation, to drive long-term business growth?
That one's a really hard one. But I believe that they're intertwined, honestly. I have to pick one. Dang,
Gaby,
you in the picking.
Gaby, we have
okay,
to.
All right. I'm picking one. I
People
believe you bring
know,
the AI
on
math.
Panels, on panels, everyone sits on the fence. I don't want you to sit on the fence.
You bring the AI math. If a marketer cannot lean into the future and cannot lean into the math behind the business that it's running, then it doesn't matter because you won't have the people to deliver what you need to deliver. So as far as I'm concerned, you bring the AI math, you lean into AI because that is where that is... AI eats data, right? It is absolutely there to facilitate an understanding, a speed, and an agility. That is what marketers need. That is what human marketers need. So if you don't lean into it, then your human marketers are gonna find confusion in the what do I do, how do I do this, or get bound up by legacy processes, and you don't want that either.
So there's a lot of econometric studies that have been done in the past that talk about how businesses actually grow. They talk a lot about the bottom funnel metrics, so the micro optimizations that you do,
yeah,
the efficiency gains. You might get an incremental 1-5%. Then you get your sort of more, slightly more macro optimizations. Where do you invest your budgets, et cetera, et cetera. But the biggest driver of ROI is actually creativity. It's innovation. So then how do you reconcile that by bringing in the AI and with the math, if actually what's going to drive your business is those amazing creative ideas that only humans really can create?
You know what's really interesting is that, and I should know this because we were talking about this at the beginning, a billion in revenue is equal to a point in market share. So if marketing is going to help drive market share, then it has to drive the billion in revenue. So anything that you're doing that's incremental is required to have scale.
Yeah.
So when you're using AI to manufacture content, let's say, for that's how most marketers use it, are you using it to manufacture the original content, or are you using it to find the scale in the content to reach more audience? That's where you start to field what AI needs to bring, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
what you're looking at is not just the incrementality of it, but the scale of it.
Yeah. But does it change the game, though?
Absolutely, it does.
Look, a lot of marketers, they go for the incremental changes year on year. They play relatively safe. And we had a conversation off stage where, you know, they'll take the same budget, they'll look at what they did last year, and they may try and innovate, you know, here and there, 5% maybe, test and learn, 10% max. But it's the same investment strategy. It's the same marketing being deployed to get slightly more incremental gains. How far is it until we start to see marketers rip up the rule book and say, you know what? What was working before in this world ain't going to work anymore. And we've got to change the game and focus on that creativity.
I think it's today. I mean, I ripped up my playbook a year and a half ago because it wasn't working. I think when you, marketers are the best risk takers in the company. We are first in. And if we are not embracing that risk, then the whole company can't embrace the risk. So if you're just going for a service mentality, incrementality,
yep,
then you're not going to do what marketing is there to do, which is build the market for your company to grow.
Love it. So in my, on my show, I would normally have here an elephant, okay? It's a little baby elephant, and I call it the elephant in the room.
Okay. Okay?
So when my guests come on, I tap the elephant, and I say to the guest, I've got an elephant in the room, I'm going to ask you a question. That's the elephant in the room. Are marketeers brave enough in 2025?
I think it depends on the marketer. That was my balanced answer to that.
That's your American politically correct answer. In the Middle East, what would you say? What would you say about the idea that people don't take enough risks and that actually business growth comes down to that risk reward strategy?
I think that's just not a marketer's problem, though. I think that's a mentality problem. Okay. I think that if you're the CEO of a company and you're bringing together your group of experts that are going to lead a company, then the tolerance or risk or the ability to risk and still be part of a collective that can help you sustain or build or grow that risk is incredibly important.
Yeah.
If you pick a marketer who's only going to do what you tell them to do, yeah, then you just broke that idea.
Yeah.
So I think it's on a CEO, it's on a CRO, it's on a COO,
yeah,
to define that. But it's also on a marketer to say, I want to be different.
Love it.
So as far as I'm concerned, are we safe? Probably. I'm relatively new. By the way, this is my first time in Qatar, so thank you very much. Very beautiful.
Yeah.
Love to come back.
Look at that round of applause from the people. They love it. The audience loves that. They want to feel the love from Qatar. We love Qatar.
Beautiful. Love it. Can't wait to come back. I don't know if there's a systemic way that people define risk here. I know in America, maybe we are a little bit oversaturated on risk.
Mm. So I'll give you my opinion. I think marketers play it safe too often, too long a time. They don't take enough risk.
Well, I know you just met me, so...
Yeah. I mean, you're some... I mean, for me, you mean, on generally speaking, I don't know the business model of NetApp as well as I should because it is a B2B SaaS-based model. And I don't know how much risk you can take with your partners in that sense. But from a B2C perspective, I see the same advertising, same marketing approaches year on, year out. And you get pretty much the same results.
You know, I think it's really interesting that you say that. So I'm going to give you two situations. Number one is... How do you define a marketing statement or a brand statement that feels too risky? I think a lot of marketers like go for the collab, right? I call it the world of commas on brand.
Yeah.
I want to define myself and I'm going to bring all the company in and I'm going to pick 100 words and I'm going to put a comma in between every single one of them and it is going to describe perfectly what I do. That's not a brand. That's not a narrative. Yeah. That's a collaboration of what everybody in your company thinks you do. That's not a risk. What is a risk is saying there are only one word or two words or three in our case where we said we are three of these words and two of them are what you've been asking us to do and one of them is something new that we decided to do. So brand is something where you have to be stable and yet look at the future. Now, for risk, I'll give you another one. We do a lot of sponsorships. And we started them off as a hospitality measure. Today, they are more brand measure because we believe that we can get more visibility for our brand by partnering with Aston Martin and Porsche and Ducati and DreamWorks and most recently the San Jose Sharks because that's in our home office and the San Francisco 49ers also in our backyard. And there are more of those to come.
Yeah.
We believe that those are brands that are risks for us. And by the way, selling those through, it took me a long time to sell those through and to create alignment to that risk.
But you probably had the buy-in because of your success beforehand, right? That helped you sell those in.
It did help. But the conversation, you know what the conversation came down to?
Tell me.
The math.
The math. You love the math.
I do. Marketers are mathematicians. I can't do math in my own checkbook, but when you give me a spreadsheet on personas and actions and cost pers, I'm all in it.
All right. On that, be all in on the next ball.
Okay,
go for it.
Ball.
We've got to crack on here, Gaby. We've got to crack on.
You're the one asking me too many questions.
No. It's not me. It's the Bulls.
Okay. Data security breaches remain TOM.
Top of mind.
I know. How confident are you in the market narrative?
So there's a lot of conversations around data breaches.
Yeah.
And you are in the data business. Your literal company is about keeping it secure, stored. There's a cloud business as well. How much do you believe in the narrative, in the market narrative, that actually everything is safe, everything is secure, nothing to worry about? Because people are worried about data security.
Listen, if I'm worrying about security for my own personal, then I know that we're worried about security for businesses. So I think it's about vigilance. I think it's about thinking about products that are integrated, not just embedded. I think it's about making sure that you're constantly reassessing. I mean, when you think about companies who do this for a living, you need to be thinking about people who are constantly thinking about it, not for somebody who's doing just a bolt-on.
Yeah.
You want an embedded API. Sorry, that's my geek in me coming out.
Okay.
We can go down a security path if you want to. We almost went down an AI path.
Yeah. I mean, look, to be honest with you, do you think that the market has got the right coherent narrative around security?
No, I think that's one of those things where words matter. Are you too scared? Do you want to create fear, or are you trying to kind of be ahead of the fear? And I think that there's a balance there.
Yeah.
You don't want to make people afraid, but you want to make them just enough to say, I need to be looking at this.
Isn't it more powerful to get people to be scared and to be fearful?
No.
When they act more out of fear?
Yeah, but then they make rash decisions, and then they might be able to blame you later. Want them to be engaged in the conversation so they can adopt and they can make change. You don't want them to act out of fear.
Very nice.
That's when they return product.
You battered that out. You battered
You're
that way. That,
yes. Am I looking for another ball now?
Yeah, I'm looking for another one. You're doing great so far.
So are you. Another Titleist. Focus on the customer has never been so important, yet so complicated. Debate.
So you've talked a lot about putting the customer at the center of everything.
Yes.
And whether you're B2G, B2B, B2C, it still remains the same principle as a marketeer. The challenge is customers right now, and that whole journey, the customer journey, the fragmentation around it, and the abundance of choice that customers have, and the media outlets that they have. I mean, this is being streamed online as well. So how difficult is it to continue to have the customer at the center of what you're doing?
I think it's just so hard. Everybody says we want to put the customer at the center. Every marketer says I want to put the customer at the center. Do you really adopt that? I don't know if we all do. I think we get lost in the work sometimes.
It's BS. You think it's BS?
No, I don't think it's BS. I think it's a goal. I think it's a vision. I think it's a dream. But just like every dream that's personal, you have to work at it. You don't just say, I want to be Michael Jordan and then never play basketball.
What do customers want fundamentally? Can you boil it down for us? What are people looking for?
They're looking for honesty. They're looking for cheap prices, let's be clear. But they're also looking for honesty. Be honest about your products, honest about what they can do, and honest about what they're going to do for me. If you can get that out there and be really clear and then continue to have that conversation, I think that's fair.
Okay, then the flip side, how often are marketeers and companies being honest with them about their products and services?
I think it depends. It goes back to that leadership stance, right? If you don't care, there's a couple of people in my space that I think would say something just to get the result. I think at the same time, you can't be so honest that you don't get any results. So, you know, I think it's marketing. Everybody knows we're marketers. Everybody knows we ride on an edge of a line of language. But if you are as honest as you can be and very clear about the values and that you've got the customer's back, they'll see that. They'll see that in your actions.
How do B2B customers differ from B2C?
Well, it's usually a longer sales cycle and a much longer relationship.
Is it harder to crack B2B? Because you've also got to think of them as individuals as well as businesses.
I think it's harder in terms of the sales cycle, but it's also longer in terms of acquisition. Like, you retain them longer. So once you get them, you have them unless you completely mess it up.
If you're a customer, you're more skeptical, if you're as a business, right, than as an individual, because there's more to, there's potentially more to lose.
For
right?
sure.
Yeah, so there's a level of, I mean, there's going to be more walls that are going to be put up, right? And you do have
well,
to try and
break
them down. Well,
I think the principle, I'll just go with what my CEO says. My CEO says, act like an owner. I can only imagine that every customer I talk to is acting like an owner as well. So what you're attempting to do is to have a conversation. Let me put it this way. When I go in and have a conversation with a customer, I am usually accompanied, because yes, I do still sell. I'm usually accompanied by a salesperson, a lawyer, and then there's the marketer. So when you're doing it together, you can be realistic and honest and tell a story. It's almost like a bad joke,
yeah,
wasn't it?
The funny thing is, you've done all three, right? You wanted to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
You did sales, and now you're in marketing.
That is true. But all three of those things together is how you create an honest dialogue with a customer that you know is going to resonate, because you're all coming to the table.
So I spoke to a futurist. This is quite interesting. I spoke to a futurist, and I asked him, name three professions that are going to go out of business in the next 5 years. He mentioned accountants, he mentioned lawyers, and he mentioned consultants. Okay, AI is going to kill those three businesses. How do you feel about that?
I think AI will kill it if you want AI to kill it.
Playing it safe.
Oh, you with the debating. Listen, everything changes. Cloud was supposed to be the next big thing. Digital was supposed to be the next big thing. AI, as we already said, AI eats data.
Yeah.
It is on you if you allow AI to eat at you.
Yeah. And on that, you know where the next big thing is. Marketers always tend to run to the next big shiny thing.
Well,
like they did with cloud-based. Like
that's
they
because
did with
we're
AI.
Squirrels.
Yeah. What does that mean?
This big and shiny, you say, I want to do that. Let's go do that. Again, okay. Inherent risk. We're built for it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do another ball.
Oh, good. Balls.
I think we've got three or four left.
I don't know. I feel like there's four. I'm going to take two out.
Oh, hello.
How about we mash the balls together? Are you ready? Everybody ready? This was a total. He was not ready for this. Evolution of marketing through test and learn, or revolution through transformation. That's the first ball. The second ball. Oh, and it's a Callaway. Sorry. What's more worrying for a marketer, no data or inconsistent data? Ooh, and it's a mashup of the century. Okay, revolution or trans... Wait.
Test and learn, or revolution, or
data or inconsistent data. I've already said that marketers thrive on data. And if you're going to revolutionize, you need to have a good way to talk about your data.
What if your data is inconsistent? What if one set...
Then go make it consistent.
But if it isn't, let's say hypothetically it's not consistent. Is it better to have inconsistent data or to have no data at all to work with and
yes.
actually rely on the human gut?
Yes, absolutely. Any data is worth it. Any data. Because you know what? The minute you use it, you're going to get feedback back that's going to refine that data. If your data isn't great, then the more you use it, we'll refine it.
But Gaby, look, people get lost in data, man. There's so much data out there. If you look at every single data point, you're not going to see the wood from the trees. I don't know how that translates in America, but in England, you say you can't see the wood from the trees because what data point do you focus on? Do you apply the same weight of data and KPI to that data point versus the other? And then if you do, does that change over time based on market dynamics? So if you're constantly living in data and data and data, you will literally potentially lose on the bigger picture and say, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to follow what I think is the right thing to do. And it's based on not just data points.
I love how energetic you're getting about this debate.
Yeah, because marketers are obsessed with data.
You know what's remarkable about marketers is that always, at least I find this, is that your gut instincts match the data.
Okay.
So if you start with a gut instinct and then you go communicate your gut instinct and then you go use the data to go do a campaign, have a dialogue, do a narrative, run a comms campaign, you're validating that gut instinct. So yeah, have your gut instinct, but I guarantee you it's probably pretty close to what the data is going to come back and tell you. So guts refine kind of your strategy and what you're going to focus on, and your data just goes and proves that out. Don't get lost in the data. I hear what you're saying. A lot of marketers will sit there and say, that's not this persona
didn't do
this.
They'll wait to launch, they'll wait to change, they'll wait to get more data in. And
let's go back to inherent risk.
Yeah.
Take a risk. I do. I'm taking a risk right now. I'm your first.
By the way, true story. I asked her off stage, do you want to see the questions? She was like, no, I don't want to see them. I love that, by the way.
That's no fun.
I love that, man. I love that. It's great. So the second ball that you picked up talked about...
Revolution or transformation.
Yeah, so test and learn, because you've talked a lot about test and learn in some of your previous shows. Test and learn when it comes to marketing and make those optimizations and you evolve? Or do you go for the revolution through transformation, which everyone, again, has talked about the last
year? I think you do both. You have to do both.
Oh,
my gosh, you hate it when I pick both.
Pick one. Stop being politically correct. Pick one. What's more important to you?
That's bad. The data side of me says test and learn. Someone who works for me is actually in the audience, and she knows that I'm a little bit not that way. I encourage just going out and trying things.
Thank you. It's the right answer.
Well, you have to. I mean, all the data in the world is going to tell you what you already know, but if you don't change it up and put something else out there, then you're...
Data is the past, right? It's relying on what's happened in the past to see what's going to... And yes, you can plot trend lines, and yes, you can predict 1, 2, 3, but if you mix it up and
I
do something... Yeah, it's a curveball. So transformation, revolution through transformation...
Yes.
...is the way forward.
Correct.
Do you think we as businesses... I know the answer. Are we keeping up with the rate of change... as quickly?
No. I think that there's so much change. But people can't take in that much change. Businesses can't take in that much change.
Yeah.
I think there are those out there who probably are change agents that are sitting back and saying, I want to do more, and they just know that it can't be adopted. So I think you have to know your audience as well. I am very much a on my front foot kind of marketer.
Yeah.
And the rate of change that I've put my team and my company through is aggressive. About 3 months ago, I had to take a step back because I just couldn't make it all the way through. So you have to know when it's too much.
I'm with you. Next ball. Let's
Ooh.
Do it.
That's one?
I think there's two. Do one.
Do and one.
There should be two left. So do one.
There are
one.
Two. I'm just going to hold on to both. So I, okay? All right. AI runs on data. I like that. And marketers have a lot. How will CMO's role adapt to AGI?
So AGI, artificial generated intelligence, will be in companies pretty much by 2029. That's what a lot of people are predicting. Ray Kurzweil was one of them.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have an AI sitting in your company and this crunching data constantly, what is the role of a CMO and how is the role of marketing in general going to be applied?
You know, I think marketers can't, like I've already said, you can't be afraid of it. I personally am using AI on the website, trying to actually make it real what digital could never get to in terms of personalization. I'm using it with my business development in terms of, you know, chat agents and agents who are able to clean out and gather names before I even touch a person. I'm using it with content. But you know what's the through line in all of that? It's not running by itself. There's still a BDR, a business development rep, that is really looking at that and understanding it. There's still people who are writing original content because, as we already know, AI eats data, right? So if you don't feed it original content, it's just going to continue to spit out all of your old content in a new way. That's not new.
Yeah.
I think that that's really the future right now. I don't know what comes after that, but I'm up for understanding. But right now, I would like to keep original and creative as well as the experimentation so I can get more value out of it.
I'm with you. Do you think AI is going to help with understanding and demystifying and decomplexifying? Is that a word, decomplexifying? Let's go with it.
Sounds good.
The consumer journey, right? And understanding how to personalize the customer journey.
I think it's closer than where we were 10 years ago when we said digital is going to transform. Digital and personalization is going to change the game. I don't think we could fully deliver on it until we are now at the stage where we've got AI. Now we actually are able to take that step and say, oh, what are we personalizing? I think that there's still a way to go. I still think it's too voluminous. That is a word.
Great word, by the way.
You're welcome.
I might use it on other shows.
I think that there's too much personalization, right?
Again, you can't see the wood from the trees when you're
That's
going,
right. So, you, yeah. like, TikTok, I'm a big TikTok fan. Like, I, you know, say something in my kitchen and all of a sudden, randomly, I'm getting, you know, chickens and bananas and I don't understand that. But
is that your safe word?
It was, sort of, a little bit. But I think that the next step for us is to say, because we're finally here, we're personalizing at scale, but it's a little too much scale. So now how does it actually maybe go back to the word personal?
Yeah. Does the danger that CFOs and CEOs don't understand AI that well run the risk that marketing starts to become, again, put on the back shelf? and AI starts to take a front job just because they don't understand the role of marketing. Is that a danger?
I think the relationship between a CFO and a CMO is already stretched because, as I like to tell my CFO, I am the biggest spender inside this company, and we need to find a relationship where it doesn't look like I'm shopping all the time.
Do you want to read your next bullet on that point?
It does say, CEOs and CFOs prioritize efficiencies over effectiveness. How valid is this statement?
Look at the timing, ladies and gentlemen. You can't write this stuff, huh? It's like magic in the air. So the relationship that you have, CEOs, CFOs, I mean, you constantly have to go to these guys and say, look, hey, it's 2025. We did great last year. We smashed our targets. I want more money. This is what I'm going to do.
I've never done that. And you want to know why? Because marketing is never green. Marketing cannot be the people walking in saying, I'm green, I did great, give me more money. Mm-hmm. We have to say, how did the business do? This is what I helped the business do. This is the trajectory. If we continue on this pace, then we can get maybe X more, whatever.
So how marketing sits within the organization will almost dictate the types of relationships that you're going to have and the narrative that you have to sort of pitch to get what you need.
That's correct.
Because you still need to leverage these people. You still need to convince them at the end of the day, whether it's in a closed group or not. But are CFOs running the show at the moment?
Of course.
Have they always run the show?
No, I don't think so.
When did they start running the show?
I think when we started to put more focus on the performance of a stock or the value of a company.
And who had that power before?
I would like to think it was marketing.
Yeah. So
marketing was always responsible for growth.
Exactly.
It's only been in the last, 50 years that marketing, all these little pieces of marketing started going to other places.
Yeah, and do you know why I think it's why CFOs have taken control more and more? It's because of fear. It's very powerful. It's a very powerful narrative to say. If we don't, and also, what can you do in business? You have two levers. You make more money, you cut costs. Okay? Can you guarantee to make more money? No. Can you guarantee to cut costs? Absolutely.
Absolutely. And what's the biggest place you cut costs?
Yeah, it's talent. It's human resource.
Yeah.
So, marketing. Or marketing. So that's it. So it goes back to the fear narrative. And that's why it's extremely dangerous when things like AI come to the market and people don't know much about it. And the CFOs are reading the stuff and they're seeing the stuff. And they're like, oh, it's going to replace everyone. Marketing is going to be the first one on the chopping block because of that. If they don't have a strong enough place in the organization.
I don't disagree with you. I am going to push on it a little bit.
Well,
I was the first one in to say, this is how I'm using AI. Do you want me to do more? No, just keep it a slow burner. And then the next quarter, I said, I added a little bit more. I heard you, but I wanted to do a little bit more. So again, I think if you have a relationship with the CFO where you're saying, I'm risking, but I'm risking safely within my budget, and I'm increasing performance, I think that they don't, it's not that they believe you, it's that they don't pounce on you.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a little bit of a curveball question.
Bananas.
Are women better CMOs than men?
I mean, sure.
I heard someone clap. I think someone clapped over there. So you think women are better CMOs than men? There is a case for it.
I think that's rude.
Why?
That's rude because that's like saying a woman is a better HR manager than a man.
Okay. How many CEOs in the world that tend to be male? Do you know what the percentage is?
No, I don't, but I know you're going to tell me.
I don't know the percentage.
I actually think a woman would be a better CEO than a man.
Explain.
I think a woman can multitask better than a man, and I think most CEOs don't multitask well, especially men.
Okay, and what about the CFO? Are women good with money? I love these loaded questions, by the way.
I mean, can I just say bananas at any point here? I don't know.
I was trying to get you to
Let's
say bananas.
Go. Listen, who cares what sex they are?
By the way, there's people who came in halfway. They're like, why is he saying bananas? That's her safe word, just in case you missed it.
Please don't go any further. Yeah. It doesn't matter. If they're the right person for the job, then they should be winning. If it's a woman, which I strongly believe that women have very good organizational skills. Don't interrupt me on this one. Women have strong organization skills. They're smart. They're creative. And they are 10 times the worker. They're the ones who are going home to the kids and everything else, as is indicated by the first part of our conversation. But if a guy can do the job and he's fantastic at it, give him the job.
Yeah. Question I have for you. Again, I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Great.
If you're a female CMO and you're reporting into a female CEO, is that harder? to get what you need?
I think female to female is always hard. Not because it's a female to a female, but because you're getting two driven type of people who think the same way. What I love about having diversity at any level is the diversity of thought and the diversity of how you get to a conclusion, because that's what makes a great and a consummate high-performing team.
Love it. Great answer. There's one last thing for you to do. Okay, I happen to have it in my pocket.
Yay.
Yay. Relax. You're like, what is it? It's a blank golf ball. So I always end my show on the inside track with giving the guest, again, more power. You get to ask anything that you want to ask, or you get to say anything that you want to say that you haven't already, or you can do both. It's up to you. Here you go.
Thank you so much for the blank ball. And we end with a TaylorMade.
Are you a Swiftie?
No. Sorry. My daughter is. I'll leave that to her. I don't know. I think I would end with, who are you? Who are you? I mean, we've been talking about marketing. We've been talking about the impact. We've talked a lot about diversity and AI. I think at the core of everything we've been talking about is you have to know who you are. I know who I am. I know that I can bring who I am to the table, and I would just encourage anybody else to do the same. You got to know who you are.
So if you were to give me a summary of who is Gaby Boko, what would that be?
I am a mom first, but I am a kick-ass CMO who really does take charge, and I take it to the table. I try to. I have to.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm making markets, man.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you said you're a mom first. You have a 30-year-old daughter. I mean, that's incredible.
Again, youth... You do it when you do it when you're young. You don't recognize what kind of an impact that has. Yeah.
So I think it's a question that you should always ask yourself. Who are we? Who am I? What are we doing? Why are we doing what we're doing as well? And I think a lot of people gloss over the reality of it.
Yeah.
They give you the 35,000 feet answer. A lot of it is insincere. It's not particularly authentic. I was someone who came from marketing and media. I worked in corporate for 20 odd years. I used to run a pretty big media agency around in these parts. But I sort of did the transition to this side because what I enjoy most is getting to know people, understanding their lives, understanding the industries that they operate in, what insights that I can learn for me. When I did my research on you, I learned a bunch of stuff about data storage I never knew about, for example. I don't have much experience in that B2B specific niche category, but I learned a lot and that helps. But I think if all of us apply a lens of curiosity to everything that we do, I think the planet becomes a much better place. With curiosity, you get to ask the right kind of questions. You get to listen, and you get to learn, and you get to understand. And if everyone understood more, I swear things would be so much better. So I think I'm someone at the end of the day who just wants to learn more, who wants to understand better, and I'm enjoying the ride 100%.
That's what data is all about. That's what knowing
you
who you are is. I got
to
bring it back to data.
You brought it back
by the way,
data.
I work at a company called NetApp, in case you weren't here. And we are the intelligent data infrastructure company. If we're going to plug you, we're going to plug me.
100%. So you, and this is the final thing that we're going to end on, right? So what has been your biggest achievement working at NetApp so far? And what do you still want to achieve?
You know, we redid our brand narrative. Again, I talked about the brand of commas. Getting to our understanding who we were and who we were for our customers, that's where we came up with intelligent data infrastructure. I think that's really important for us. We've signed some amazing sponsorships. I'm excited about that. But that's just stuff.
Yeah.
I think what I'm really excited about is that I'm watching my company grow and turn a corner and retaining a culture of diversity and inclusion and conversation and just... We're excited to come to work every day. That's the kind of company you want to work for. So I'm most excited about being part of that.
And honestly, if I was in your team, I'd be excited to work for you as well.
Oh.
I would be. Look, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, Gaby.
Thank you.
It's the first ever Inside Track on tour, and you're the first ever guest. And honestly, I couldn't be more grateful. So thank you so much for being
part of
it. Luca,
thank you for letting me be the first.
And thank you guys for listening online and for, of course, this wonderful, beautiful audience. Bye-bye, Doha. We'll see you very soon.
Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.